Services are at 9, 11, and 4:30. Our chalice lighter this morning is Carter Campbell. And at the conclusion of the service, Neely and I would like to greet all of you at the Portland Avenue doors. Once again, I welcome each and every one of you to Unity Church. Thank you. names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our hearts. May we be forever grateful for those lives that have touched ours. Will you join me in prayer and meditation? Holy One, source of light and dark, sorrow and blessing, we come together today as one human family, one human race, broken, hurting, joyful, yearning for wholeness. Spirit of love, untangle us from the web of separation and isolation.
this morning is an excerpt from an essay by Adrian Piper entitled Passing for White, Passing for Black. A benefit and a disadvantage of looking white is that most people treat you as though you were white. And so, because of how you've been treated, you come to expect this sort of treatment, not perhaps realizing that you're being treated this way because people
get to where we are today. The early history of the colonies in this country reveals something remarkable about the construction of race and white identity in North America. Granted, these early colonists, they did have a concept of difference. They noted people were different than one another. They understood that. But it was not race as we know it and think about it today. land that formerly belonged to Native Americans. And throughout the following decades, the story remained the same. More wealth and land accumulated in the hands of white people, often because of the labor and at the oppression of people of color. As one of the presenters said in this video at the race exhibit, if the early colonists had just simply said, look, we need labor, and we have the power to enslave, to get that labor, that would have been one thing. Because when that power was gone, slavery would have been gone with it. But instead, America created this idea that people of color, and not just blacks, but people of color, were fundamentally different and inferior to white people. This prejudice, plus the power to enforce it, created institutional, systemic racism. And for over 350 years, our schools, laws, and culture have reflected this. Despite gains in the civil rights movement, we still live in a country that is sick with the disease of racism. It may seem hard to believe, and I sort of doubt it myself, but I'm not here to introduce to you or to load on you feelings of guilt or shame about this. We need to understand this history, to recognize this history. But I'm not here to dump a burden of guilt on you. I'm here as a white person, thinking about this history and saying that although Unity Church has an anti-racism team and is doing good work, it's time for me personally to recommit to this work. It's time for us collectively to become active anti-racists. And I honestly believe that in doing this work, as imperfectly as we will do it, we will make mistakes. We will brush up against our deepest fears and insecurities and uncertainties. But in doing this work, we will engage the whole, that spirit of grace and love in a way that perhaps we never have before. So for white people, this work starts with naming an often invisible part of our identity. I'll begin. Hi, I'm Justin. I'm white. It's not a God-given thing, that white, but it's the social construct I have. This anti-racism work continues when we reclaim our own history and cultural heritage. I'm not just white. I'm a quarter Irish, I have Bohemian, and English, and Scottish in my family. We can explore the complicated dynamics of racism by reading Tim Weiss's book, White Like Me, or Tandeika's book, Learning to Be White, or Paul Kibble's book, Uprooting Racism. For white people, anti-racism work deepens when we talk to other white people about white identity or about race and about the way that white privilege works in the world. Speaking of privilege, author Tim Weiss offers this observation that struck me. And he said that Arabs are being treated with suspicion since 9/11. Well, white men were not treated that way after Timothy McVeigh's bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City is entirely about white privilege. It's clear, to me at least, that Timothy McVeigh, after that horrible bombing in Oklahoma City, he no more represented me or any other white man in this country. And yet, since 9/11, Tim Weiss, and I think he's right, would say that Arab Americans have been under different scrutiny. So in doing this work as white people, we must, of course, form alliances with people of color and listen to what they have to say to us, to what they can teach us. But much of this work is ours to do. And I have no idea if we can change 350 years of racism in our lifetime. But I do know this, change is possible. And shortly after